fine friends. Welcome back to Destination Discourse. I'm your host, Stuart Butler, joined today with Adam Stoker, who's back in Utah. How are you, Adam?
You know what? I'm doing great. Would you like to hear why?
Sure, I'd love to hear why. I'm sure our audience is really keen to learn why.
Well, you know, usually when your team, like if you're a sports fan, if they beat a mediocre team, you don't get that excited, especially on a last second shot. But I'm a big BYU fan. And last night, my BYU Cougars played this mediocre college, little college, I think somewhere in South Carolina. I had never heard of it before. Clemson? What? How? I'm not sure, but they played this team and just an incredible game. Won on a last second 3-pointer from a member of the BYU team. And anyway, it just a mediocre team, but nothing special. But for some reason, it really touched my heart.
You know what's great about this? How you're trying to like wind me up. You know, I'm actually a University of South Carolina fan, so I absolutely hate Clemson. So,
do you really?
Yeah,
Dang it. My
son goes to the other USC, and my other son has already been accepted there. So, I'm actually kind of happy that Clemson lost. To be fair, and may have just lost a few of our fans, but
those would be fighting words, though, for some people in our office.
For sure. We have a lot of people that bleed orange in our office, but I think that's funny.
And for some reason, I thought I had heard you say that you're a big Clemson fan, and so I'm so disappointed to not have the satisfaction I was going
for.
I'm
really, really glad you did this live on air, and now it's in the edit. It's in the canon of the show forever. It shows how little you pay attention or know me, but that's okay.
Well, when you're around somebody that talks as much as you do, it's hard to – I don't have a database to put it all in. You know what I mean?
That's fair. Well, we are speaking of talking too much, you are talking too much. I haven't even had a chance to introduce our co-host today, I'm going to call her, because she is going to lead a lot of this conversation. And this is someone that, you know, obviously I know really well. You've gotten to know really well. But this is my right hand. I think a lot of the amazing things that our team takes credit for were the brainchild of this person, and she really keeps the reels on the track. And she I couldn't do what I do without her. But without further ado, it's Diane Chono, our very own EVP of marketing at Visit Myrtle Beach. Hey Diane, how are you?
Hey, happy
long
to be
time
here.
No see.
Right. I think I just saw you in the last Zoom this morning.
That's exactly right. Well, we're excited to have you on. We've been talking about getting you on for a while, and just schedules. It's hard. You and I are running in different directions most of the time. So glad that schedule synced, and glad you're on the show.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah.
So where do we want to start? Do we want to start with the Stu's news? Because
well, look at her taking control. I told you she was going to host.
You said co-host.
Yeah, she's jumping right in. You know, in true Stuart fashion, I'm going to do what I do in a daily basis with Diane. I'm going to let her do all the work, and I'll take all the credit, right? So if we want to take it away, let's do the jingle, Adam, Stu's news.
Let's do it.
Head bopping there, Adam?
Oh, yeah. You know what? I love
this. Competing
song
with Jennifer and Caleb?
This is in my workout mix now.
It's it, bro.
You know what's funny about the jingle, I'll tell you real quick, is my kids have figured out that because I have it queued up all the time, that if they will just walk up to my computer, even when it's locked, and hit the play button on the keyboard, Stu's news blasts throughout the house. So whenever my kids are in the computer room, all of a sudden I'll just hear Stu's news going crazy in my room here. So,
it gets an endorsement from your kids?
Yeah, kids love it.
That's nice.
Kids love it.
All right, well, Diane's going to bring us Stu's news today. So you had sent this one earlier, and I love it. So go right ahead, Diane.
Yeah, I was actually catching up with emails this morning and saw this interesting headline from the New York Times for a story that just posted yesterday. And it said, these travel influencers don't want freebies, they're AI. And it talked about, you know, subtitles, social media posts by AI created travel avatars cost far less to produce, yet look and sound real. Human influencers worry that they're being elbowed out.
Yeah.
So I thought it was an interesting topic.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's something you and I have talked about a few times, you know, all the way back to the first ever virtual influencer that I was aware of was on Instagram, and it was called Lil Michaela. And she was like a digital avatar that would travel to different places. She was based in LA, but she got millions of followers because this is way before the AI generation and the technology made it easy. And I remember back in the day, this is probably 5 or 6 years ago, I was playing around with Unreal Engine and trying to build my own 3D avatar to do something similar with Myrtle Beach. And then all of a sudden AI came out and you're like, oh wow, this is going to make this really easy. And then you saw campaigns like Germany did their digital avatar and others. And now with like Sora 2 and all these other technologies, Nano Banana, that there's just it's the barrier to entry is zero now. The cost is zero now. But I think, you know, what we're going to see is what we have seen, which is a lot of just slop getting pushed out, right? People sort of mailing in and doing the bare minimum and missing out on the point. So I don't think that we're going to see the removal, the elimination, or the replacement of real people, as long as these real people are creative and novel and innovative and doing showing real personality. Because I think it's going to take just as much effort, if not more, to do that with AI than it will in real life. So I think these people are going to be fine as long as they're good at what they do. I think it's like anything, the bottom percentage are probably going to get replaced, but the top performers are going to always have a place. That's my opinion. Adam, what about you?
Yeah, we've talked on this show about the difference between an influencer and a content creator, right? And I think this actually highlights really well what the difference is. If all you are is a product pitch person, you are so easily replaced by AI. And I don't think that's going to be very difficult. However, I kind of feel like a lot of the creators that have gotten popular, especially in the last 2 years or so, they've done a really good job of creating unique and interesting content and building enough of a connection with their audience that their audience actually looks forward to what they post as creators. And I think that's going to be a much more difficult space for AI to break into. What I will say is, I do think it'll eventually break into that space, but I think it's going to be much more challenging. And people are now going to look for authentic creators that are human that they can follow. And I think you'll see actually the creators that have done a good job of building a relationship with their audience. I think you'll see their audiences grow more significantly as AI continues to overtake the influencer space. And so I would look for creators to get a big bump from this and influencers to have a real problem with it.
Yeah, we've been playing around a lot with Sora too, and posting a bunch of short videos and creating like accounts on YouTube and just posting a bunch of stuff. And it doesn't matter. What I've found is it doesn't matter how creative I get right now with the AI side. I'm going to get a certain number of views, right? But if I put a celebrity in there, like so, some of the cameo things you can do on there. You can use, like I did one with Jake Paul, and that by far was the number one. It was just wasn't creative, it was just Jake Paul hanging out in Myrtle Beach, right? And I did one with Mr. Rogers, and so the celebrity cachet seems to be hitting the algorithm in a way, or at least engaging people more than just regular creative content. So I don't know, Diane, you brought this article, it obviously stood out to you. Where are you thinking this is going?
I mean, I think it was interesting, and I wasn't aware of some of these avatars that they shared. Qatar Airways is one that has over 350,000 followers, and people are engaging with the content. It was also interesting to see the comments on this article, which I'm like, wow, this thing. When did this go live? This was just posted yesterday, and there was quite the debate happening from people who were anti-influencer in general. And then obviously creators and influencers that didn't like it, that were anti-AI and even talk about energy and all of that. So I just thought it was an interesting thing. As you said, we're exploring the use of AI. We're trying to find lots of different ways to dramatically increase the amount of video and content and things that we're putting out there. It can be challenging to do that at scale sometimes when you're trying to work with a lot of different influencers. We're lucky that we have millions of people that visit the destination that are already doing it. They're creating real content and putting it out there on a daily basis. And I'm always excited to find ways of how we can help amplify that and encourage more of that. But I do think there is a place for it. for looking at these tools and creating avatars and personalities that can help give you another view. We played around with it with our first iteration of our chat, online chat, right? The Beach Babe, the Beach Buddies, they were animated like avatars, but they were personalities in themselves, right? We had fun with Mattari Best when we played with that too, and there was a AI robotic personality to that that people loved engaging with. So I think there's a place for it, but there's this big debate about authenticity and how do we really people want real experiences. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how the different age groups and generations over time start to shift and how they engage with the variety of content that's coming their way.
Can I add one more thing here, Stuart? So one of the things that I think is going to happen here as we kind of extrapolate this to the future with AI influencers entering the space is I think the cost of creators and influencers has somewhat reached a pinnacle in general. And I believe that by adding this layer of AI influencers into the mix, the cost of having an influencer for your destination is going to go lower because there's so many more options. And when you think about like when companies get acquired, for example, there's always the build versus buy dilemma. Are you going to build the product in-house or are you going to acquire the product and have somebody who's already built it bring the value immediately, right? And I think the same thing goes for organizations who want to sell a product and are looking to have an influencer sell their product. Are you going to build an influencer through AI or are you going to buy an influencer that already exists? And I think the ability to build for such a lower cost than it used to be is going to cause people to feel much more comfortable paying a lower price to build their own. And it's going to drive the price in general for creators and influencers down across the board. And I kind of feel like for destinations, that is going to be a good thing because some destinations are spending so much money on influencers and the value they're getting in return doesn't match. And I think the economic scale is going to get a little bit back in sync with where it should be.
Yeah, I think the rubric that you evaluate it is going to change, right? Because you're right in some ways, right? I think the cost, the barrier to entry cost is going down. I think there's also going to be a lot more noise, right? So the signal to noise ratio is going to be more of a problem. So you're going to have to be more selective about who you think. So it's possible that there becomes, and there's this weird thing that happens in every industry. It's like an exponential growth of the best performing people in any industry make significantly more money than everyone else, right? The top 10% earn significantly more than everyone else. And so I think we're going to see that. We sort of already have it, but I think that's going to get exacerbated. The people that really authentically build communities are going to still be very valuable and worth spending money on, but the sort of the middle tier have certainly lost a lot of their cachet. But the answer is probably both, right? We should probably continue to do both of these things, and the economics will market will dictate the economics. Overall, I think it's a good thing for us as marketers because the cost of content in general is approaching zero. Certainly scale content, it can be done in a much more affordable way than it ever has. We've just got to be careful we don't fall prey to that putting out content that is just slop. That a lot of people are. We got to really focus on the quality of that content. And I think when it comes to authenticity, right now, it's probably appropriate to disclose or lean into the fact this is an artificial person. It's not real, right? I think the uncanny valley
Don't
is
hide
still
it.
there. I think if you try to manipulate or pretend otherwise, you're going to get caught out and that's going to create some backlash. So I think we're in a time now where you should continue to disclose and kind of have fun with the fact that it's AI. We're probably not far away, a year or two, where that uncanny valley is going to be almost zero and people could probably get away with it. I don't think they should, but they probably can. This is a good topic. I mean, it's ethical conversation, it's a strategic conversation, it touches a lot. So Thank you for bringing it, Diane. And we're going to throw the main topic over to you as well, because this is your host today. Like I said, you do most of the work around here, and I take the credit. So we'll continue that trend with the show.
We have a
So
big team behind us that does most of the work, I'll be honest too, but and we're
yeah.
lucky to have that team and
Yeah.
team of agencies as well that really help us deliver everything we're doing. But thank you. I really appreciate it. So the other topic that's been hot in some of our conversations as we're working on annual planning is really about display advertising, digital display advertising, and is the click dead? How can we rethink what ad effectiveness means today in a zero-click AI-driven world? So we all know that we're looking at investments each year, what we're trying to do, and I think you guys have talked about it on the podcast itself with what's happening in this zero-click world when people are going to Google, having all of those results served up to them, or they're using chat agents or even staying within the walled gardens of social media, that they're not leaving and going to your websites. I think most DMOs are reporting that there's about 30 to 40% drop in website visits this year alone, and I feel like that could possibly continue to climb. And so that also impacts the advertising and the referrals on your site. And it starts begging the question how we evaluate our ad effectiveness, what we're investing in, and does the click really matter anymore? So that's the topic I wanted to bring up to get some of your smart dialogue and thoughts on this.
In full disclosure, Diane and I have not sat down and had this discussion internally, like in depth. So you're going to see us sort of flesh some of
Hash
this
it
out in
out.
real time and
Battle.
see where we end up. So Adam, this is we're getting free consultancy from you to help us develop, our future strategy. So I'll throw it to you first,
I want
seeing
you to
as you're
know,
not on
first
the
of
clock.
all, I did engage my filter and avoid the joke that immediately came to mind when you said that. And I'll just skip right to my response. And now I hope you're curious and I'll tell you later what the joke was. But this is an interesting topic for me because it's a dilemma that I have been grappling with now for a couple of years. And to me, whenever there's a question like this, I think you have to go a little bit back to first principles. And so, if you don't mind, before I give you my response, I want to ask you guys a couple of questions. And question number one is, why did we buy display ads in the first place? And why did clicks drive value for you as an organization in the first place?
That's probably evolving, I'll say, right, with this kind of changing environment. But I think
Well, it's evolving, but I want to get to the original, like, why did we do it in the first place? Because I want to establish and understand that before we talk about where we're at today.
it's probably, I mean, I it's hard to say just like a traditional display banner and why you bought it, but generally why we did, it's you're hunting for people, right? You're trying to get your message and build awareness for your destination. And so we're doing that online in many cases. Go back, I've been in this business a long time. It used to be that was done in a newspaper, that Sunday travel section, and we had to buy ads or the phones did not ring, and visits did not happen in many cases. And so this has dramatically shifted over the years. But I think we've leaned into digital display, I'll say a lot over the years. It's grown because it's measurable and because you can get clicks. People get away from, they start worried about linear television, like how many people actually saw the ad. If you think of out of home, how many, like, sure, we have estimates on the eyeballs that saw out of home advertising, but those sometimes are more difficult to click. So the beauty of measurement with digital has really made it easy for us to lean hard into it. And then for a DMO, we're trying to drive referrals to partners often. And so that's even more measurable. I used to call it crack for our partners. that we created this kind of pay-per-click program that they were participating in, and we were delivering so many clicks and referrals to them that they were addicted and they wanted more and more,
Perfect.
even while the system was changing and it cost more and more for us to deliver that, probably more than we were getting in return for it. It wasn't a smart investment that way anymore. So it's changed.
So that's exactly what I wanted to get
Can I add
to.
one thing to it as well, though?
No, me and Diane are just going to move on. No, yeah, of course, go
That's fun. I feel like I'm like the guest on
ahead.
your show now. Like you and Diane have taken over hosting. Everything Diane said is right, right? She touched on this sort of awareness thing, which the traditional funnel has always been considered awareness, consideration, and conversion. And so digital replaced a lot of the traditional media for a couple of reasons. One, Diane sort of touched on it. It was measurable. The other is we could get more specific and more targeted, right? We had a little more ability to pick our audience, pick our geolocation, pick our website, whatever it was that we wanted to do. So we could get a little more precise with our targeting and we could measure it more. So I think those are what led people over time to move shift budget towards digital display.
Think it's really affordable too, compared
So
to other.
yeah, right. It's where people are too. You're getting in front of people because there's a lot of inventory.
So I've heard three things then, and I just want to make sure that I'm kind of nailing what those are back to first principles why we did it. Number one is awareness. And just like, and you mentioned, Diane, 30 years ago, we all bought newspaper because that was where the awareness was. That's where the attention was. And so awareness is one. Number two that you mentioned is you were able to drive tangible value to your partners that they also perceived that value. And so what you were telling them they were getting and what they perceived that they were getting were a clear match, right? And then number three, Stuart added in the ability to target specifically and really narrow in on the audience that you're trying to reach. And it's I'm actually really glad you started with what you started with, Diane, because what did we do when the effectiveness of newspaper advertising was no longer what it had been in the past? Advertisers moved elsewhere and the newspaper industry died. Now, what I'm not claiming at this moment is that the display industry is going to die because I'm not saying that at all. But when the attention was no longer on newspapers, the smart money moved elsewhere, and then the dumb money kind of slowly came after, right? And so we look at that, and then we can also look at what you mentioned about generating value for your partners. Well, we're in a position now where the partners are no longer perceiving the same value of a click that they did in the past. And they're saying, well, yeah, you're sending me a bunch of clicks, but are people coming to my, establishment, my hotel or whatever, right? And so all of a sudden the perceived value of your partners is no longer there. So we're seeing that attention on display ads is decreasing. And part of the reason for that is that a display ad is with so much noise, like Stuart talked about, a display ad is very difficult to get the same amount of attention that it did in the past. And then the perceived value, once you get that attention, is no longer the same as it was before. And the third leg of the stool that you mentioned is targeting specific people. Well, when cookies are getting less and less relevant, and you actually have to click allow cookies on almost every website now, we're getting to the point where that third leg of the stool also has a lesser value than it did before. So, from a first principles perspective, why would we continue to put the same amount of budget into a platform where the three legs of the stool are less valuable than they were when we started? That's
It's
where I'm at.
like that old joke about democracy being the worst form of government, except for all the others, right? Digital display is still the place where it's most measured. All of the trends you're talking about, the pendulums that are swinging, you're exactly right, right? I'd argue it's not necessarily the perceived value. I'd argue it's probably the actual derived that is diminishing. My camera went off today. Sorry about that. But I think, where's your alternative, right? Where would you put money today that is as targeted, as measurable, as effective, right? It's hard to say that. I mean, we have opinions on that, Diane and I, and where we're shifting budgets. but we're not doing that. Like 90% of our budget isn't going from, say, paid media to earned media. But in a year where we're shifting budgets, you know, we've got downward pressure on our budget because we've gone through our COVID money and, you know, performance and all that stuff. We definitely cut paid media more than we have earned media and owned media, you know, there's no question. So I think we're making that shift, but what's the alternative right now?
Well, it's a good question. I think my answer would be probably two or threefold. Number one is if I had a silver bullet, I think every destination in the world would work with me. So I mean, obviously, I'm still going through the same testing and exploration that every destination is going through. I will say that I believe that the things that are going to get attention are going to take more work, manual work, than what's currently happening with display advertising. Savannah does a great job of taking their show on the road, for example. So they'll do a pop-up activation in New York, and they literally bring food, they bring trees, they bring everything, and it really feels like you're stepping into Savannah in New York when you walk through that activation, right? And so I think if you look at the impact of that on the people that you're able to reach versus what you can do with display advertising, of course, you can reach a larger volume of people with display. There's no question about that. But what's the impact? And what I would start doing is I would start comparing a $200,000 media spend in display advertising to a $200,000 activation and say, okay, what gets more clear derived value for our partners? And, you know, that's just one example. And again, an activation is one thing. But what I would start doing is A/B testing equal budgets in different projects and seeing what the outcome is, because it's really attention and visitation are the two things that you're trying to generate.
I want to push back on you a little bit, and then we'll let, I guess, chime in a little bit. But, you know, and I'm not going to pick on Savannah because I think what their campaign is gained a lot of attention, right? Neither of us know the results of that, right? Neither of us have seen how many people actually came to Savannah as a result of that, right? So we're sort of assuming that attention equals conversion. We're assuming that attention within our space, which it's gotten a lot of attention in our space. I don't know how much attention has gotten out of our space. I certainly haven't seen it on the, you know, nightly news, right? So it's possible we're in a little bit of an echo chamber. And the reason I say that is we've had campaigns like this. We've had some campaigns that are award-winning and gotten us a lot of attention within the industry. But then at the end of the day, when we look and measure the impact, it's not nearly as much as the fanfare that surrounded it, right? So I think one, we just got to be a little careful, right? But two, I do agree that we should be testing, but I don't think budget is the only comparison, right? Because
Sure.
you've got to look at the amount of energy and focus that you're putting in, like the labor time as well. You've got to also look in what are the other the derived value in multiple facets and where the people are, right? So if I am running a, say, a $200,000 paid media placement, digital paid media, and it's sort of middle of funnel, or people that I know are already interested in Myrtle Beach or have been to Myrtle Beach before, that's not a fair apples to apples comparison to, like, I'm going to Times Square and doing an activation and meeting complete cold people and trying to drive awareness that will eventually, maybe over a certain time limit, lead to a visitation. So I think it's really hard to
Yes.
do that AB apples to apples.
100%. But my question would be, what's the opportunity cost of being wrong for too long? And that's why,
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'm not saying test an activation like Savannah did. That may be what's best for them and not what's best for other destinations. But I think we have to do a better job of taking some of that media budget and testing alternatives, as opposed to, you know, if you're wrong for too long, and I don't mean you, but a destination in
Yeah.
general, if you're wrong for too long, how much money do you waste? So for one, you've got the loss of the money that you're investing in being wrong, but then also the loss of the opportunity if you were to find what works today. And that's why just continuing to buy display advertising, and I hate, Diane, you brought up display, so I'm picking on display, but to stay with that without testing alternatives trips constantly. I think that's my fear, and I think we have a lot of destinations that are doing that today.
Damn, we'll let you chime in. We've gone on a rant for like 10
Yeah, you
minutes.
guys have had lots of good conversations. So the one thing I would say about by the way, I love the Savannah activation with the trolley and them going on the road. And we've done some activations, experiential field stuff, and continue to explore those opportunities. I would say that activation did not live on its own. And it's not one because I mean, at least I wouldn't do it that way. And I've talked with Savannah a little bit, but I don't know the specifics or the results of their campaign too. I've seen the case studies and the stories on it. It looks great. What I will say though is, I mean, I would have, if I was in those markets, I would have layered that in with some probably digital and social and other efforts. So it's not just one. I think many times we might try to take a measure all of these things as single deployments and evaluate it only as on that merit. And I think they all make for the mix of the messaging that we do, and we have to kind of continue to look at it from that approach. So I think ads that probably ran, digital display ads that probably ran promoting Savannah in New York after they were in Times Square or wherever they were, for example, were probably more effective because they got layered in with this someone that experienced that, right? So I think it's hard to look at these as one-offs all the time. And I would challenge that it's not just, we're not just evaluating display by itself. I think it has a role to play with what we're doing, and it's why we're still investing in it at this point. Measurement allows us, is a big part of that. And I think paid does overall get attention for us, and owned is kind of where we can really earn some of this efforts. And AI and what's happening there is going to help us accelerate what we're doing. We have to use all of them and deploy all of them in the mix. But you know, when I talk and challenge even our partners on how we're using display, I do think we can do better. And I think there's probably some slop and some waste in there. And so our team, we've challenged all the way across the board to say, you need to look at the full journey of that traveler and how and where is display? What is the message on the display? Is it too generic? Is it not? And then what are they, when they do click on it, what are they being served? How could that be stronger? Should we not be measuring clicks on certain implementations if it's purposely meant to almost be that outdoor board on the World Wide Web, right? That's reinforcing and reminding them of something that they've experienced and engaged with the fact that they want to go to the beach. So it's hard to just, I think too often we will look and only measure it for the click. And I think we have to move beyond that.
For sure. Adam, so a couple of things. So one, Diane sort of touched on something that we're thinking about a lot, which is, a digital paid media budget is lower this year, but we're not putting less effort into it, right? We're actually putting more into it. We're trying to figure out more of that complete journey, the creative being more specifically targeted. AI is actually allowing us to do that more nimbly than we could have before. We can be a little more agile. So I think that's cool. But surely you're not arguing, Adam, that paid media, we should put all of our paid media into activations alone, right?
No.
Are there other areas you feel like what the DMO should be shifting budget towards instead of paid media?
Yeah, I want to be clear. If we're going back to the three legs of the stool, right? That what you're looking for is, Diane, you said awareness. I would actually redefine that today as attention. I think awareness is what we used to be looking for today. It's attention that we're after.
Yep.
Number two is you want to provide direct value to your stakeholders who are expecting value, right? And so number three, you mentioned, gosh, off the top of my head, I'm trying to remember what that third one is. Oh, the targeting, right? The ability to target people effectively. So I'm not suggesting, I want to be very clear, and I'm glad you asked me that question. I hope nobody takes away from this that everybody should be moving half their media budget into activations. My argument is I want every destination to be testing a combination of paid media tactics, earned media tactics, owned media tactics, and seeing how they affect the three legs of the stool. And do you have the ability to deliver higher value for your stakeholders by using different tactics? And I just think testing over the next 3 years, testing is probably the number one priority for marketing teams in all destinations, because what worked yesterday could be the newspaper of tomorrow. I'm not even arguing that it is the newspaper of tomorrow. I'm saying it could be. And the cost of not actively testing a lot of different things right now could be really, really detrimental to destinations who are either trying to acquire market share or retain market share.
I think
So
AI's made it easier for us to do some of that too. I mean, we do, that is ABT, always be testing is something that we talk about quite a bit and challenge our team to do it. I think optimization, and when you're deploying digital, really programmatically, it allows you, I mean, the systems are allowing us to get smarter, to deliver, the algorithms are letting things to be smarter and work more effectively and always improving that. So I think there is an opportunity for us to even continue to push our team to test even more.
yeah, for sure. I think the problem a lot of DMOs have, though, is in order to test, you've got to first be measuring. And I think a lot of folks either aren't measuring at all or aren't necessarily measuring the right things. And then if we're testing, we're trying to optimize and just making sure we're optimizing for the right things, you know, because it's easy to optimize for stuff like CPM. Right, which would be a terrible thing to optimize for because you're just getting low quality impressions. You could even optimize for clicks, but even that is something that if the click's not a valuable click, then I'm probably doing it wrong. You could optimize for referrals to your hotel partners' websites, but again, if you're not measuring conversion, you know, is that really valuable? You could measure it all the way to conversion on the hotel websites if you're sophisticated like we do, but even that's not a true measure, right? Because you're not looking at necessarily lifetime value of customers or who that customer was and what actual incremental impact you had on that person, you know, because if this is a person that's highly that we're targeting because they index really well for us in terms of our target market, right? It could be someone that has a high propensity to book because they've been to Myrtle Beach every year for the last 10 years and spent money every year. But now I'm celebrating an ad that they saw that led to a booking, but they would have maybe booked anyway, right? So we got to really step back and figure out like what as an individual DMO, what matters to us and what are we optimizing for? Because you can do a lot of damage optimizing from the wrong
Yeah.
KPIs.
So I guess the natural next question then is, what are the right KPIs to be tracking to and valuing?
Think it
Yeah.
depends on the funnel, and then there's KPIs and market level, right? Like we are trying to attract visitation and visitor spend that drive our economy. And so that I usually think of as the number one goal and measurement. Like if we're successful there, that's helpful. Trying to measure how our investments, our marketing investments, whether that's in paid, owned, or earned, have influenced those visits as well, to show that return on investment is important for us. From an ad spend perspective, it's that return on ad spend. But we're doing that different ways. So we also, playing with what's brand lift. We do brand studies for some of them, because if we're trying to measure influence and attention, those are new things to measure and to evaluate the ad, or a particular placement for. So one of the things we're playing with right now too is actually kind of creating a brand lift pulse or index, if you say, that is taking a look at all of these different brand lift studies we're doing from a variety of different placements and programs to see collectively like how that performed and how that moved the needle on recall, on awareness, on intent to visit, on other engagement metrics. So those are some things we can be looking at. Search lift, I think some of the things we do from a display is we think if we're not bringing some volume and scale, and display lets us do that pretty efficiently. Like we can be doing television and video and a lot of social and even our television shows, some of our own branded entertainment, right, that are creating some great branded awareness and impressions, emotional impressions of the destination. But then it's the other placements that can help create that awareness and also some measurement, even let us know that somebody engaged and watched that show, and then they took all of these different actions, and then eventually showed up in market. You know, whether we're working with like arrival list to do that. But we are asking those questions, like, how do we know the fact that so many video views were completed? How do we know that was truly effective? And that's where we're trying to experiment with some of these other measurement and other tools, like working with an Adelaide that's giving you an attention lift metric and awareness and brand lift metric.
Yeah, I mean, really, our task is impossible, right? Currently, the technology doesn't exist today, and I doubt it ever really truly will, because it's really hard to measure some of the intangible value that the work we do has. But even if we look at the tangible stuff, I mean, ultimately, what would we want to measure? We would want to measure the incremental impact we had on our economy relative to the global market, and the net impact it has on perception of the experience and the happiness of our visitors, right? There's not one KPI there. There's probably 500 KPIs that would look at all that stuff. But the dots can't be joined today between all of those things at once. So you have to sort of measure through a bunch of different lenses and then piece that together into a cohesive strategy or insight that leads to strategy. And I think one of the challenges is, like, if I look globally at what's going on in the agency world right now, there's a lot of rush to automate, and there's a lot of rush to sort of outsource. Like, a lot of the big agencies have either laid off workers, and I'm not talking about in our space, I'm talking about outside, laid off significant numbers of workers and outsourced things like data analysis overseas. And I think that's the exact wrong way to think about it. Like, you've talked before in the show about how we want to pay agencies for how they think, not what they do. And I agree with that. But, like, the data and insights and strategy that comes from that is probably the most valuable piece, because it helps inform everything else, right? It helps us make better, more informed decisions that help us make better investments and ultimately perform better for our market. So I think if I was sitting in your shoes right now as an agency, I'd really be thinking about the data and insight side and how that leads to strategy and to actual the work that gets done. I wouldn't be worried so much about how the work gets done and how we automate that, although you should be finding efficiencies. It's how can we do more with the data that's now available to us than we could before.
I mean, it's funny. We as an organization, from an automation perspective, we're actually trying to move out of execution that can be automated, because then our value disappears, right? And so we're moving more into the actions that require human strategy, human thinking, and so yeah,
Creativity,
we're yeah, and creativity, all of that. I want to ask the uncomfortable question. That I think for especially organizations that are entitled destination marketing organizations, I think this is an uncomfortable question, but it's a little bit of a litmus test for are we building relevance for the DMO or relevance for the destination itself, right? And my question is there ever a point where, let's just say, $10 million invested in product improvement based on interests of people that come to our website or indicate in other ways through research or whatever. Is there ever a point where $10 million invested in product improvement is more effective in improving the value of the destination and the long-term impact of the destination than $10 million in media spend to get more attention to a destination that doesn't have the $10 million of improvements. And $10 million is an arbitrary number, of
Sure.
course, but
Yes.
I believe that's the uncomfortable question that everyone's afraid to
Yeah,
ask.
the answer is 100% yes, right? O obviously, right? If you don't have product, you can't market, right? In something like a good product is an annuity, right? You look at Model Beach. I mean, we can pat ourselves on the back and say it's every all the work Diane and the team does, and the rest of our team does that drives 18 million people a year, right? We can say that, but really, we're maybe influencing, if we're lucky, 10, 15% of that, right? Most people are coming here because we've got 60 miles of beautiful beaches and amazing attractions and live theaters and 2,000 restaurants and the stuff and the great hotels, right? That's why people are coming here. So, yes, I think this product is key. And I think this is why I'm beginning to understand a lot of people talking about DMMOs versus DMO. I don't like that phrase. Because I think management is Sana has the same problems of that operating system thing I was talking about a couple of
Yeah.
episodes ago. I don't think it's management, right? But I think we're certainly a conductor convener, but someone has to sort of be the tip of the spear talking about cohesive product development, whether that's your economic development organization, whether that's a separate organization. DMO should be involved in that conversation because they have the data and they know the visitor better than anyone. So they'll know what type of product is most needed. You know, someone like Myrtle Beach, I think we're going through this sort of debate right now with our board and with our community is, you know, we have a very healthy marketing budget. You know, I would argue it's not big enough, although some folks would argue it's too big. When I look at how much we spend per visitor, it's actually low on the index. Like there's a lot of destinations that spend more per visitor than we do. And when we look at the number of hotel rooms or when we look at the total size of our economy, we're spending low relative to our scale, right? But our budget's pretty big. Right now, there's very little money, public money going back into product development right now. And so the question that is being had or being asked and the discussion's being had is, should we create new buckets of money to focus on product development, or should we shift money from marketing to product development, right? This is a conversation that's happening. No one's saying, not one person's saying we shouldn't invest in product development, right? So I think that answers your question. You have to have a product to market. And so, yes, there are times when $1 million or $10 million is better spent in marketing than in product than marketing, but you can't ever get into a situation where you're all in one bucket, right? You can't be all marketing, you can't be all product development, because you can have the best product in the world, but if people don't know about it, then they're not going to come. So it's, you know, like anything, it's a balance.
Yeah. Diane?
I agree. I mean, it's even when you think of the four P's of marketing, like product matters. It matters. It influences the experiences people have here. It influences their perceptions. It's important. We're not, we haven't been the product developer. We've been the product promoter, right? And we've helped navigate and influence and share a lot of the rich stories and experiences and the awesome product that we have here. I think as destinations grow and evolve, that's where it can get a little bit more nuanced. And I think there's opportunity for sure for us to think about that. But I would say it's not, you don't have one without the other. And I would also argue that we have tons of product development happening within our market all the time, year round. There's what, over 80
80
properties,
plus hotels,
hotels that are
renovations or new builds, yeah.
renovated or new and changed and built. There's constant development. We have tons of restaurants. Product development is happening all the time because when you create, you know, create a place that people want to visit, you create a place that people want to invest and live and work and play and all the other things in that other flywheel that Moore Glass came up with and shared long ago. And so people are investing here. People are moving here all the time. But we have, there is opportunity. And we do have some areas within our destination, and that's where this debate is how we should think about the investments in the destination, and should some of that shift from one bucket to the next? I would say we can't empty any of the buckets. We got to balance it somehow.
For sure.
I
Well,
think,
we're running a little bit low on time, Adam, so I just want to sort of begin
yeah.
to put a bit of a bow on this, and then you can ask the question you're about to ask. But it's really interesting to me that we started out talking about, is the click dead? And we sort of come all the way back to product. All of this is interwoven. It's really interesting.
Well, and it's funny, Stuart, that's where I was going to go, is like we have to, in our paid media buying, figure out what the, and not just paid media buying, just marketing in general, figure out what are the necessary KPIs that drive true tangible value to our partners. And if we don't, I actually think all roads lead to that question is, well, should we be spending this money if we don't have the measurable impact? And then you get challenges to funding that it should be moved into product and all that kind of stuff. So I think it's really important that we collectively, as an industry, agency partners, data partners, of course, DMOs, we've got to work together to figure out what are the key KPIs that we should be measuring that drive tangible value. Because if we don't, I think a lot more questions like the one I asked at the end are going to start to get asked at the destination level.
Yeah, and I think they already are. I think to me, the one thing I would like every DMO that's listening to think about is, we talk a lot about first principles on the show, and we had a good little conversation about that last week, talking about our audiences and stuff. But we've all got to be questioning right now, what is our purpose as an organization, right? And that's going to be different for different organizations, because you're going to have a different ecosystem that you live within your community. But why do we exist has to be a question that you and your team and your board can answer. And then you work from that to, well, what if this is why we exist, how do we measure that? But our focus needs to be right now 100% on impact, right? What can we do that has an impact? Not what can we do to justify our existence, not what can we do to give the illusion of relevance, not what can we do to make sure we have funding. Our primary responsibility right now, and it should always have been, but I think we got a little, some folks got a little lazy over the years, or comfortable, let's say. Impact, impact, impact. Like, if we're not doing stuff that are making a tangible difference in our community, either by driving the hospitality economy, or improving the quality of life of our residents, or improving the product in our destination, then what are we doing? Impact is the core mandate for every DMO over the next several years, especially during all this transition and the headwinds that we're facing. So, Diane, we're about out of time. Any final thoughts? I don't know if this conversation was where you intended it to go, but I thought it was a productive one to have today.
I think it was a productive one too. I'll just end since I started with that click top, our display ads dead, and I don't think they are, but I just think lazy display ads probably are, and that we need to get better at doing our job. And I think we've heard that across the board, whether that's product, marketing, what the stories we're telling across the board, we need to think about how we're measuring and make sure we get better at telling that story too.
For sure. Well, Dan, if people want to reach out to you, find out more about all the wonderful work you do at Visit Myrtle Beach that I take credit for, where can they do that?
You can reach me while I'm on LinkedIn and Facebook. You can find me at Diane Charno or diane.charno@visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Thank you for being on, Diane. I'm sure we'll have you back on again real soon. This is good.
Absolutely.
And we got a lot to figure out, so this is probably the only chance we'll have to have conversations, So good. Adam,
Well,
final
thank you.
thoughts from you?
No, I thought this was a great conversation. I agree. Diane, would love to have you come back and make us think even more. My email is adam@thebrandrevolt.com. You can find me on LinkedIn or, of course, on Tourism IQ.
Great. You can find me at stuart.butler@visitmyrtlebeach.com. We're really scheduling out the next couple of months of guests, and it's going to be stellar. But we're also looking for new ideas, fresh ideas. So if you want to come on to the show, we'd love to have you. Just reach out to us, either online
Yeah.
on LinkedIn or on email. Go ahead,
Real
Adam.
quick, you mentioned that we're somewhat in an echo chamber, and I think you're totally right. So what I want is if there's somebody listening going, hey, there's something they haven't talked about yet that we need to discuss, please let us know. Because, of course, we get in our own conversation and our topics match our interests. And so I would love to have somebody say, hey, you're missing this completely. Come talk about it.
Yeah, we need to start a bingo game where we end up quoting each other or quoting ourselves, you know, because I think we do tend to, hey, this is an established idea, but it's something we established like 3 episodes ago, you know. So I think diversity of opinion is important. We need to get a little more friction on here. So that's great. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening. Oh, and Adam, I'm 10 days into my miracle morning, so I'm still going strong.
Ooh.
I'll keep you updated as we go. So hold
you know,
me accountable.
In our next episode, I want to hear more details on how it's going.
Okay. We'll do that. We're out of time today. But thank you, everyone, for listening. Please drop a like, subscribe, review, all those fun things. Somehow it helps the algorithm find, you know, show us to more people. And then our egos are boosted when more people listen. So until next time, this has been Destination Discourse.
Thanks, everybody. You made me think big time.